You're listening to episode number 10 of the podcast. Welcome, everybody. I hope you are having a fantastic week. Apologies for being one day late. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we are joined with a Twitch partner, Kevy, who's going to be talking us through his journey to partnership on Twitch and what he has in store for the future. Playing games such as Pokemon, if that's your kind of thing, listen up because you might just learn a thing or two. All that and more, guys. I'll see you on the other side.
You are listening to the Content Experience Podcast, the podcast for those wanting to learn more about all aspects of content creation and streaming. Each week, we sit down with some of your favorite streamers to get to know the story behind the stream and what advice they would give to help build your dream career in content creation. All this with your host, taco lover, sci-fi geek, and award-winning tap dancer, the Mike James.
Welcome, everybody. Today with us, we have Kevy, who is a fantastic streamer, but don't take it from me. Kevy, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Kevy. I am a Smash Ultimate coach and competitor from New York. I also love Pokemon, and I speedrun Sonic the Hedgehog. You could find me playing other games every now and then, but I thrive myself on having an open conversation community, whether it's on topic with a video game or off topic. We like to do stuff. Yeah. What an intro. Yeah.
I mean, it's a good intro. You're getting your point across there. So before we go into your journey, let's talk a little bit about the games that you stream. So you're sort of big into your Smash Ultimate, right? And coaching it and things. Tell us a little bit more about the coaching side of that.
Sure. So I do off stream. Sometimes on stream. I do paid lessons for Super Smash Bros. To help people that are competitive with the game try to place better at their tournaments or try to get ranked or etc. Whatever somebody's goals are, whether they're small, whether they're big, I really try to help those people arrive at their goals. And I've been doing it since January and I've been seeing really good results. I've got a server with like 60 people in it. And it's also a subscriber perk to join the student server where we post like daily videos to help people with advice and where students could play each other and get friendlies because it is a competitive, like get better environment, learn the game environment. So I've devoted a lot of time towards that and a lot of people have seen good results. And all the time, one of the things that we really push there is to ask questions and to work towards those matchups that like you struggle with. Try to find people in the server that play those characters and try to learn instead of get frustrated, because a lot of people want to win way too fast. But I try to make it so that people can have a play to learn, not a play to win approach.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. We are going to come back to that in just a second, but for those that don't know, can you explain a little bit about what Smash Bros Ultimate is?
It's a Nintendo party game where it's not really just Nintendo, but it's like it started as a Nintendo character like party game that is a fighter, and the community has turned it into something that can also be enjoyed competitively. But it features characters from like all over the gaming realm, like even Metal Gear Solid, Mega Man, Pac-Man, Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, it's a third party and mainly Nintendo celebration of characters that are fighting it out on a bunch of different like Nintendo maps as well. It's fun.
I mean, it sounds super cool. Obviously, I wanted to get that question out of the way for anybody that might not be familiar with the franchise. But what you're living
under a rock if you're not familiar with Smash Bros.
What sort of character do you enjoy playing on Smash Bros?
Well, me, I'm like a really, really big Pokemon fan. And when it comes to Smash, there's like 10 different Pokemon. So I gravitate towards those the most. I like Pokemon Trainer the best out of every character right now. And then I could probably list 20 others that I love using. But yeah, Pokemon Trainer is my favorite.
How many characters is there in the Smash game right now?
Right now, we know there's going to be 75 with DLC included, but there's rumors that there's going to be even more than that.
Holy smokes. Yep. That's quite a lot. So sort of moving back a little bit to the coaching, because that's super fascinating, because we've had in the past known people that have done like stream coaching and things, but mm-hmm. what's like the ultimate, because I know you mentioned about, you know, people wanting to, you know, learn more about the game, to just obviously be better at the game. That's why you'd learn about a game. Kind of obvious, but like, is it like one of the more, is it to try and go, is there like a, I think a question that I'm trying to ask, is there like a big professional scene in Smash? Is that why people want to be coached in it, or is it just,
yeah,
just get better?
Yeah, the esports scene, it's not as big as it could be, but it is bigger than it's ever been right now. And there is a lot of esports. There are a lot of esports team like signing players on, and a lot of people like going to a different city every weekend just to compete. And the money is not as big as it could be, but it is one of the most vibrant, lively scenes that I've ever been a part of. It's really fun.
Yeah, I mean, have you done any like sort of competing yourself, or is it like not something that you're particularly interested in?
Yeah, I like competing at the local level. Like, I go to local tournaments in Albany or Middletown, New York, and I used to be a power ranked player 2 years ago in Mid Hudson, New York. I was number 10 in that region. Now I don't really travel and get out as much. I more so just kind of stay at home and help people get better. But I like going to tournaments and I like competing. It is fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you like coached anybody that's like attending the tournaments, or has nobody got to that level yet?
So they don't really allow for coaching at tournaments. Like in between a set, if you were like, yo, you should do this more, you should try this, they don't really allow for it. A lot of people want it to be a thing, but I think for the sake of just keeping it fair, because some players might have a coach, some players might not, they just don't really allow for it. So
yeah, I mean, that makes sense. So let's move on a little bit, because obviously that is a main part of like what you do, you know, Smash Bros. But I want to go ahead and find out a little bit about you, sort of let's call it the ghost of Kevy Past, if you're a fan of the Christmas Carol. I know we're nowhere near Christmas, but let's roll with it. Okay, so what was your journey like before? Like, did you do any sort of content creation before Twitch, or
talk
us through what you used to do before Twitch?
Sure. So I guess I'll start a little bit before that too. I was out of high school pretty early. It was halfway through my third year. I actually dropped out and then started homeschooling. And then I got a job at the movie theater, and with enough money and in my spare time, I was watching like YouTube videos. And one of the favorite content creators I ever watched was Psycho, S-C-Y-K-O-H. He's like known for doing glitch videos and stuff on his main channel. And he does a bunch of Let's Plays now, and he streams every now and then. But he said in one of his videos, he's like, this is my job. And I was like, whoa, that's really cool. I have a job that I don't like. And with that money, I bought a 3DS capture card. And since he mainly made like Pokemon glitch videos, I was like, I'm gonna make Pokemon playthroughs. So I started a unique challenge on YouTube. And within a few weeks, I got like close to 1,000 subscribers. Like, it really took off. Like, a lot of my friends in real life, who they weren't seeing me at school anymore, they're like, oh, you're doing this now, that's cool. And most of my friends are supportive of it. My family was supportive of it. So it got shared around a lot by word of mouth through my friends telling people like, oh, he's trying this out. He does this. He bought a really expensive piece of equipment to try to start this. Like, go watch my cousin, go watch my friend, et cetera, et cetera. And then one of my comments sections was a few people were asking me to try live streaming on Twitch. So I made a Twitch account to watch, and I watched this guy Gohan15. I don't know all the numbers, but it's like Gohan and five numbers, and we're actually still friends. It's really cool. But I started watching him, and he was like breeding on stream. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. He's taking a really boring thing and making it fun for himself. You know, Pokemon breeding. Like, I couldn't imagine just doing this in my spare time, because it's just you're riding on a bike back and forth to hatch eggs is what you do with that. But he was trying to get competitive Pokemon with good stats, and I found that really fascinating that he was just kind of like interacting with the chat. And I'm like, that's really fun, like a live Q&A session, a live like hangout session. I want to try something like that one day. But I actually then just saved streaming for when Smash 3DS came out and for when I moved into a new apartment, and that was when I got started, and it was really fun. And I did Smash 3DS for a while, just to start out, and that's kind of like how it began. Yeah.
So, forgive me. What year was it that you dropped out of school?
It was 2014. So 2014. It's yeah, it was right. Like 5 years ago. Yep.
I mean, what's that like dropping out? Because I know you always hear it, right? In the sense of like all these success stories. I know people like, I don't know if you're familiar with Sir Alan Sugar, in the UK. He does the show The Apprentice, and he actually dropped out of school and started selling bikes from the back of a van. I'm not trying to glorify leaving school, but what was that like leaving school, like for you? Because that must have been quite scary, especially going into something like YouTube, which, you know, even to this day doesn't really have that sort of high, let's call it the high parent approval rate.
Yeah, well,
as a career.
Well, I didn't like drop out of school to become a content creator. Like there's a whole series of personal complications as to like why I had to do that. But I mean, I did end up still graduating early because I didn't just like drop out of high school and then stop going to school. I dropped out of high school and then I pursued homeschooling. So, I mean, that it was fine. It was sort of just what I needed to do based on what was going on in my personal life, you know. So if anything, it just made things a lot better for me. And it gave me the time to be able to devote to content creation when I realized I wanted to do it. But I was already out of school by that point. So it's not something I would recommend is like, don't drop out of school just to like be a content creator unless you have like a plan. But if it's what you need to do, it's what you need to do. You know, it just ended up being what was right for me on the circumstance.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not suggesting that anybody sort of leave school. It was just obviously because I just wanted to get to know, like, obviously it was like the start of your journey. So I just wanted to know how it was for you personally. You know, you've sort of dropped out of school for personal reasons, and then you wanted to start this journey. So I just thought I'd, you know, build on that a little bit. So let's fast forward. So that was 2014. Obviously, you've been doing YouTube, and then you started Twitch. At what point did you start? Well, obviously, you wanted to do it as a career quite early on. But what point did you really start, like, seeing the potential? Was it like right away? Did you just start seeing it? Because you mentioned word of mouth, right? Was it like right away, or did it take time before you realized that you could make something of it?
I've always in the back of my head like wanted to make it something, but while I was going to college and while I was working as a waiter, those are two things that I started after I started streaming. I realized I'm like, this is kind of like a slow process. There's no rush to really like make it work. Like I had my community built up from the start from YouTube and stuff. I never really struggled with the like getting people to watch my stream from the beginning. I was mainly just like hosting Smash 3DS tournaments on my streams like two or three times a week I would stream. And most of my other time was devoted towards school, social life, and working as a waiter. Or server or whatever you want to call it. So it wasn't really until a few years into it, I'd say it was like 2016, I started thinking about it, and I actually took like a huge break in 2016. That's why I started thinking about it. I'm like, when I come back to this, I really want to like build it up even more. And then it wasn't until 2017 that I actually built up enough like financially and viewership wise to where I was like, okay, this could really like be my job. So it was definitely a slow process, and I always was thinking about it, but I handled it practically, I'd say. I never like jumped the gun, I don't think.
Well, yeah, because you see quite a lot of, well, I mean, I don't know about you, but you definitely see quite a lot of affiliates jumping on board. And we were actually speaking about this last week, because a lot of people jump on board on the, because, you know, a few years ago, Twitch never had the 75 average viewer achievement, and you got partnered off the back of being, you know, having a growing community. So back like 4 years ago, it wasn't necessarily 100% about the numbers. It was more about, well, it kind of was, but people didn't get into it with that focus. Whereas now, because we've got the 75 concurrent viewers that you need to apply for partnership, that seems to have become part of like the game, if you like. People are, you know, jumping into it like, oh, I need to get to that 75 concurrent viewers over the last 30 days in order to apply for partnership. And nobody seems to be really focusing on the journey, but more so focusing on the end game and, you know, doing all they can. And you've got the things like the all the communities that are popping up right now, like the support for support communities, the lurking communities, and all those things. But we can talk a little bit about them down the line. But bring us about into sort of the modern day Kevy. So obviously your stream's smashed. Do you want to talk us a little bit through a bit more in depth about all the other things that you stream as well?
Yeah, so I actually, like I said, I started YouTube with Pokemon playthroughs, and then I started streaming with Smash. So over time, after a little bit more streaming, like once I was more, like, I guess, quote unquote, established, if you will, after I took a long, long break, I came back into streaming close to when Pokemon Sun and Moon came out, like in late 2016. I started just doing Pokemon Nuzlocke live because I didn't really have the energy or desire to continue YouTube because of the reasons you were saying earlier, like how it's kind of flaky and not really glorified as far as money goes. So I came back into streaming with Pokemon Nuzlocke. And for those that don't know what a Nuzlocke is, it's like a permanent death challenge where you have to keep the first Pokemon you catch, and that's it, on a route, and you're limited to that one in that route. You have to nickname them for the sake of bonds, and if your Pokemon faints, you can't use it at all for the rest of the playthrough, and it's over once you beat the Elite Four. Also, Dub Clutch Gaming is raiding. Hello, people. Welcome to the best streamer interview ever.
So yeah, obviously, yeah. What was that shift? Let's talk a little bit about that shift. How did that shift go from Pokemon to Smash? Was it because, I mean, they're both sort of, they're not exactly within this, like, the same genre, but they are all intertwined, right? So did your community on YouTube, did they like support you 100%, or was it like one of those things, like if you imagine somebody going from making, say for example, League of Legends videos into doing Apex streams, you're going to have that sort of mix of thoughts on your on the content. Was like, how did you find it?
No, a lot of them really liked it, because even though I started YouTube with Pokemon videos, a lot of them really liked the Smash streams because Smash was so new. And a lot of them already owned 3DSs with, because anybody who plays Pokemon owned a 3DS. So a lot of them also owned a 3DS with Smash Bros. And they were like, oh, I could play Smash with him. Oh, I could play Smash with his community. Oh, I could just like talk to him about Pokemon, even though he's playing Smash, you know, like it. Anybody who likes Nintendo games typically likes the other Nintendo games. So they did like it. I did find, though, with streaming, when I went from Smash to Pokemon, that it actually led to growth. But whenever I've gone from Pokemon to Smash, that all the Pokemon people from Twitch are like, this isn't like as chill, or like he's not answering my stuff as fast. So I've found more plateaus from going Pokemon to Smash than I have from Smash to Pokemon.
I mean, yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about growth, because obviously everybody seems to be focused on growth right now. So let's talk a little bit about what your opinions and thoughts are in regards to growth. Obviously, you've already said that, you know, that you were looking at it from a practical standpoint. You weren't rushing into things. You weren't like trying to get it yesterday. You were, you know, thinking about it practically. So what was your mindset when it came to growth over the journey of streaming and making YouTube videos?
Well, I've found, as far as, I think the end goal, well, not the end goal, but the biggest goal for most people, I think calling it an end goal is actually horrible, but one of the biggest goals for everybody, like everybody and their mother who has ever streamed or watched a stream on this website, wants to get partnered, or they want their favorite streamer to get partnered. So that's a conversation that's like always going to come up for a streamer that's dedicated and devoted. People are going to ask, are you thinking about getting partnered? Do you want to get partnered one day? Or you deserve to be partnered? Those are a lot of things you'll see in a younger streamer's chat. And I'm definitely no exception to that as somebody that streamed 2015, 2016, before we even knew a lot of these requirements. It was just kind of like, oh, people get it. Like, even if they don't have hundreds of viewers, there are people that get it. And none of us really knew the ins and outs of it. So it was always a conversation that came up in my chat is like, when are you going to try to get partnered? And I always like applied here and there, but it was always a no, like the next day. So I figured I got to just kind of take it easy and really build up my numbers before I really think about it. And I think as far as growth goes, to achieve those numbers, you have to be devoted, have a consistent schedule. You have to deliver a message and content that your audience can digest and understand and accept. So if your brand is Pokemon, for example, are you a Pokemon shiny hunter? Are you a Pokemon Nuzlocke or challenge runner? Are you just a casual player who does a bunch of stuff? Do you play competitive battles, like, or do you do all of them? You kind of have to deliver that message and give people something that they know they can expect. And if those things change, make sure you're not jumping to a completely different ship. Make sure that you're still like within the same relative waters. Oh, that's a cool analogy. I like that. That was on the fly. Yeah.
I mean, it's funny how you mentioned, you know, like if you want to make a change, then don't just completely jump the gun. Because we interviewed that nerd Violet not too long ago, and we were speaking about you know, being a genre specific streamer, and we were talking about, because there's a lot of people coming out of Twitch nowadays that just sort of turn around and they say, oh, I'm a variety streamer on Twitch. But there's that thing that's been going around for a few years where people say, oh, if you're trying to grow a stream and you're trying to get sponsors for your stream, saying that you're a variety streamer is like the kind of way that you're telling the potential sponsor that you don't know what your value is.
I disagree with that, but yeah, go on.
I mean, we'll talk about it in a minute, but So we were sort of discussing that, you know, rather than just saying, oh, I'm a variety streamer on Twitch, try and be like a genre. So I'm a sort of a horror focused streamer, streaming Dead by Daylight, etc., etc. Or I'm a battle royale streamer who focuses mainly on Fortnite or focuses mainly on PUBG or Apex, for example. But I mean, so what is it that you disagree with?
I think that, like, by saying you're a variety streamer, I don't think that that's necessarily harmful when it comes to, like, finding brands or when it comes to how you present yourself. But I do think there should be some sort of, like, focus or common ground that your community can identify you by. So let's say you're a variety streamer who has, like, a bunch of anime character emotes. That's an example I can give. Like, let's say you're a variety streamer, but all your emotes are like anime characters, like from Naruto or FMA or from One Piece. And those are all your emotes. Like, that's essentially your branding, right? So you could say who you are when you introduce yourselves. When people raid you, you have to like kind of sell yourself, or you don't have to, but I would say this is something that you should maybe try to do, is sort of have an identifiable trait that people can set you apart from the others with. So if you get raided and that's what you like, let's say anime is one thing you like, you'd be like, hi, I'm Allison and I love anime and we talk about food and our dogs. And I don't know, like, that's probably a horrible example, but I guess just having something that sort of is identifiable other than variety, you can still be a variety streamer. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with titling yourself that, because some people are just themselves and they don't even know what their brand or what their niche is. They are just them, you know? So I think that has selling power in of itself. Like, my community likes me for me. I can sell any product because I can stream anything, you know? I think that there's something powerful there too.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the business term value proposition might be thrown out there if you wanted to speak in sort of business terms, where, you know, you're sort of delivering the element of value that you're going to bring to that person if they follow your channel. So you mentioned, you know, Allison We all love Allison. Allison and her anime emotes. Her value proposition would be anime, so people know that if they're going to follow Allison's channel, that they're going to be able to talk about anime and the different animes that people like and things. So I haven't actually thought about it in that way before. I've always had quite a mindset of it being a bit more broader than that, about like game genres, but I've never really considered mentioning, you know, like using it like personal interests as a value proposition. That's actually a really, because you could do that with almost about anything. I mean, for example, I like tacos. I don't have them often enough, but I really do like tacos and Mexican food. So,
right.
If I wanted to, I could make all my emotes like Mexican food themed, and then
exactly, and that's really unique. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought about it that way. I mean, I've learned something today, so
yeah.
If nobody else has, I've definitely learned something.
Well, some better examples I could give too is if you're an LGBT streamer and you have a very open environment, and you're still a variety streamer, when you're talking to brands, you can mention that you're an advocate for the LGBT community, or you're a member of that, and that is something that you discuss in your streams, and that's something that ties your community together. That's a huge, great thing. Another thing is if you're a mental health advocate, you know, you have a safe space where anybody who struggles with their mental health in your chat, they know that they're safe to talk about those kinds of things. Like Go Operatives is a great example for that. So those are just a few things, like what you advocate for as well. Like as long as you talk about those things, there's no harm in being a variety streamer, I don't think.
Mm. Yeah. So, are you an advocate for anything in particular?
Yeah, I'd say like part of my stream, and one of the things that people can expect is to know that they're safe to like talk about LGBT or mental health things. That's why I threw those two examples, because I'd say I felt under both of those, on top of being very Nintendo and Sonic branded. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that whole thing. Like even just being an advocate for something, like I've always been that sort of person where, you know, I've always been that as a human. If somebody tells me that they aren't doing well mentally, or they've got, you know, or they're just feeling quite low, I am that person that will go and sit with them and chat with them for hours and hours and hours, even though I know that by the end of it, yeah, they're going to have somebody that feels like they've sat and they've listened to them and they felt heard. But, you know, ultimately, I'm not going to be able to help heal that person, but I'm still going to try and help just listen and just be there to listen to them. But I've never really considered myself being an advocate for mental health. And I don't really think it's like a personal choice of not wanting to do it. It's just not something that I've really ever considered. But it's definitely worth sort of thinking about if you feel like extremely passionate, or you know, about a certain subject, about being an advocate for it and creating a safe space. And again, you can sort of use that to, you know, gather or target the audience that are going to have the same mindset, rather than having such an open and broad audience. You can sort of really focus down to the people that are really going to be up for speaking about those related subjects. But I mean, that's blown my mind. honestly, I've never really considered using things like personal interests and things as part of your value proposition. I've definitely been more game focused than I have like, you know, interests focused, if you like. But I don't even know if that's really a term. But anyway,
when it comes to games, I think of it like this: like I don't think it makes you unique or special to enjoy a popular game, because thousands, hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of people also enjoy that same game. So like, what is it about you as a person that you can throw out there that makes people interested in you, that you know will deliver more of a common ground or more individuality, so to speak? You know, like even being LGBT or advocating for mental health, that doesn't make somebody unique, but throwing that into a video game passion, I think does.
That's interesting, because whenever I've sort of said to somebody, oh, you need to find a way to, you know, stand out in a game, you need to find a way of, you know, bringing value to people within a game. So yeah, you might want to be like a Fortnite streamer, or you might want to be a you know, a Smash streamer or a RuneScape streamer or whatever, but try and find something that makes you stand out. But I've never really sat and thought about, well, how do you actually tell somebody to stand out? But I mean, that could be something to anybody listening right now, that could be something to consider. So if you're listening right now and you're sort of maybe a little bit stuck and somebody's asked you that question, like, oh, how do I, like, people keep telling me to stand out, but how do I stand out? Well, the answer is to use what you're passionate about and use your interests as your sort of part of your branding, you know, and build things around it and really play into it so that you find and connect with people that are on that level. Because finding, becoming friends with, or building a connection with people, in order to do that, you've got to find the commonality between the two. You've got to find the common ground that you can both talk about, because you can't just, for example, you couldn't just stick me and you, Kevy, in a room and expect us to be instant best friends. I mean, right. I'd love to be able to do that, but unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. So it'd take a while, and we'd sort of throw awkward questions backwards and forwards, and we'd be like, oh, well, what do you like? Well, what do you like? But then eventually, we'll find that one thing that we're both passionate about, where we'll sit and talk about that for hours and hours and hours. So it's kind of building off of that, right? It's where people can come into your chat and be like, oh, you like this? Oh, let's talk about this for forever. to a sense, which is fantastic. But so moving on, what's, obviously we've spoken a little bit about your history and about what, you know, what you're about now, and we've touched a little bit upon like your growth like as a streamer and stuff. What's your sort of goals, because we mentioned like people's goals tend to be partnership, but what's your goals right now for, not necessarily for the end of the week or the end of the year or whatever, but what's your goal now that you've hit that partnership? What is your goals moving forward?
One thing, actually, I struggled with this a couple days ago. I feel like as a partner, sometimes you can, when you aren't like always taking off, or you aren't always in that period of like financial or number growth, sometimes you can feel very stagnant and kind of like forget why you started streaming. I don't know if you've ever heard the term like that. A lot, most partners plateau. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but it's something that I've seen a lot on social media, because the people I follow, But one thing that I've been working on, and this is more of a daily goal, is don't forget why you started and try to make it fun for everybody that comes by. And don't like streams. Don't just like put yourself in a box. Don't just stream something because it's like what you're used to doing, because if you're just doing the same thing over and over again, it's not going to be fun for people. So I want to like go back into like trying new things with Pokemon and trying new challenges again. There's a new Sonic game coming out the end of next month, so I'm speed running a little bit more, and I want to be able to do that again. I want to be able to speed run again, because last year I got in like top 10 in the world for Sonic Forces. So whenever Team Sonic Racing comes out, I want to do speed runs for that. And I want to, like, one thing that I used to do too in the year that I got partnered, I used to like pull out my guitar and do improv songs all the time, like whenever something fun or funny happened. So I want to throw music into my streams a bit more too, but it's a matter of like taking those goals one at a time and just kind of pacing myself while still enjoying my own content. I think one of the things also, you shouldn't put content out there that you yourself wouldn't watch. If you're going to put out content, you should be able to watch it back and entertain yourself. You should like your own streams or like your own videos. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I've been trying to do recently is try and bring a bit of value in regards to like a bit of education. I don't want to be that streamer that tries to educate other streamers in how they should do it, because I don't want to be a stream coach. I don't want to be a stream mentor. What I want to focus on is just bring in the knowledge of those that are already successful, like yourself, and apply it to the people in the community and the people that are looking for the advice. You know, I'd never force advice upon anyone. I'm not gonna, you know, grab somebody by the head and be like, you need to take this advice or you won't grow. But yeah. I just want to like share everybody's experiences and everybody's growth methods, if you like, although I don't really like using that term, to, you know, to help everybody become better creators. But obviously plateau, like, you know, when you hit that sort of plateau, it can be quite difficult to sort of build off of that, because you start doubting yourself, right? In a certain sense, you start questioning whether or not if what you're doing is still working and things like that. So I mean, that must be really difficult for you to sort of tackle and embrace. But I mean, it definitely sounds like you've got a plan to sort of you know, tackle that head on within the coming months. I mean, what about real long term? Like, is streaming something that you see yourself doing in like 5 years?
I feel like streaming has become so routine for me, like, since I was a late teenager, now into my mid-20s, like early 20s. I feel like it's just something that, because I've made so many friends and I continue to build more relationships, like, I met you like not even too long ago, right? And like, I'm always going to be coming across new people and interesting people that I enjoy surrounding myself with. And on top of that, I also have my personal life and, you know, the Smash scene, like going to tournaments, and that I wouldn't have gone to Smash tournaments had it not been streaming. So I feel like I think about all the opportunities that I might not even know about when it comes to things that I do in my personal life that will come out of streaming. You know, it's such a broad, vast world when it comes to this specific niche entertainment corner, right? I don't ever know what I'm going to come across. And there's always going to be a way to make it fun. And like, these games that I grew up loving, Smash, Sonic, Pokemon, there's always going to be new ways to make them enjoyable. Like, Pokemon is basically limitless when it comes to ways to enjoy it, because you can self-impose a challenge. You can go for different colored Pokemon. There's always going to be a new game like every year. Revisiting games like on the Nintendo 64 and Game Boy, it's never not fun to do. So being able to relive that and explore it and share it and find new ways to enjoy it with audience implementation. Like, when I was doing a bunch of the Pokemon challenges in sequence, like, I played every single Pokemon game start to finish for 5 straight months with self-imposed challenges. We did like naming themes. We made the layouts together on stream. We sang songs together. Like, there's always going to be a sort of way to make it creative and fun, especially as new games release. And I find the streaming and content scene also has made it so that these companies can continue to put out games that also are kind of with our constructive criticism and our feedback. Like, Smash Ultimate threw in so many aspects of the game that were like what the audience wanted. So I think of that for like Pokemon and for Sonic and just for like a bunch of other things that I grew up loving too. Like, I know they just re-released Spyro. They did like the Crash Insane trilogy. Like, who knows what else is going to come up, like, as content gets bigger and stuff, you know? So whether or not I'm doing it full time, absolutely in 5 years from now, I definitely see myself still using the platform for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to ask because what I've had quite a lot of recently is people saying that they're getting into streaming and they want to grow the streams, not necessarily as a career, but as a stepping stone into the sort of, you know, the business behind streaming or into the gaming industry. So obviously I just asked because, you know, you might have had an ulterior motive of, you know, starting out as a streamer but eventually working for maybe Pokemon or Smash, you know, working for the company. And you know, if that's something that floats your boat, then, you know, that could be somebody's goal. But obviously yours is just more about, you know, doing the content that you love for hopefully as long as possible, which is great. But yeah, I mean, there is something that we mentioned before we started recording the podcast, which I'll touch upon a little bit, is your amazing hair, because you have purple hair right now, and you said you were going to talk about that, so I'm interested to hear a little bit more about the purple hair of Kevy.
Sure. So it actually in 2017, it was the year I got partnered, and it's when my channel like took off more. That year, I was a waiter and I was working in an office as well. I was working two jobs while also streaming like 4 to 6 hours a day. Like, I would go to work at 9 in the morning, then I would end the office shift at 4. Then I would go to work at 5 p.m. as a waiter, close the bar at like anywhere between 11 to midnight. Then I would get home and I would stream for anywhere from like 3 or 4 hours to sometimes 6, depending on if I had to go to the office job the next day or if I just didn't care if I was getting 2 or 3 hours of sleep. I really made content like a part of my everyday life too. And I felt like it didn't really take away from my social life or from tournament life. Like, I didn't work every single day, but I was like at least 4 or 5 days a week. I had full days pretty much. And if it meant not getting a lot of sleep, then it meant not getting a lot of sleep kind of thing. It wasn't until that summer of 2014 that I was able to quit my job as a waiter and quit the office job and go full time. Like, finances were going really well for streaming to the point where I could quit. And one of the rules at my waiter job was you could not have colored hair. So to celebrate being able to quit that, I dyed my hair blue, and I kept it like that for over a year. And then I went blonde for about a month or two, and then I went pink. And then after that, faded out. My most requested color by that point. I kept getting asked, what are you going to dye it next? You should try purple, I guess, because Twitch, or because they thought it would look good compared to the blue or pink. I don't know. Then it was this December, like a few days after Christmas in 2018, I dyed my hair purple, and it's been like that ever since. And I've liked it the most. And since dyeing it purple, nobody's asked me what color are you going next, or they haven't suggested another color. So I assume this is the best one so far, because I've had it for almost 5 months and people like it. So, or almost 4 months, yeah. I know how to math.
I mean, sometimes you see people that have like dyed the hair like a certain color, and it doesn't. Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't quite suit that particular color. Doesn't quite suit them, but your purple hair like really suits you. Like, I couldn't picture you with any other color hair. Maybe like a dark blue, maybe. But I mean, that's kind of close to purple anyway. But no, I ask because it's funny, because obviously a lot of people don't really know like the my personal history. But when I was in school, I went through that sort of emo and goth sort of phase, and I actually used to like bleach my fringe, and then I used to get those like pink crazy colors, and then I'd like for example, they were just like wash in wash out type colors, and I'd put like purple in 1 week, and then after like a week or two it'd wash out, and I'd be like, I'm feeling like a blue this week. Put blue in, and then the next week or two, then I'd be like, I might try green, and put green in. And it just used to be like an extension of just like my clothing and things. It was like, oh, whatever color I fancied. And then it sort of grew out, but now it's been replaced. You can sort of tell on the camera, it's been replaced with a gray patch. It's now gone, and it's a natural color, by the way, this gray.
Nice.
You can't really particularly tell all that much in this light, but my dad actually went fully white and gray at 25. And I'm 24, and now the gray patch is at the front of my head. But I actually thought that was caused by, you know, damaging my hair from bleaching it for so long and then coloring it, but obviously not. Like, for example, in the chat right now, Storm Fortress says, oh, I thought you dyed that. It's not dyed, I promise. It's 100% natural. That gray hair. I don't know what I can do to prove it, but if you want me to submit any evidence, then I can do. The only evidence I can really submit is that you go and look at the past like 4 years of my progress as a growing, if you like, then you'll sort of see that. But anyway, so yeah, like let's talk a little bit about. Obviously, I know you're a Smash coach. And you're not a stream coach or a mentor, but if you were to sort of give some advice, so imagine I am brand new to, let's keep this simple, right? I've just got Smash, and I want to stream it, and I want to do it as a career. What, obviously, when you first get it, the first bit of advice is don't stream to do it for the money or for the or do it as a career. Just enjoy streaming it at the time, because you don't even know if you're going to enjoy being a streamer. But let's say we're past that phase now and we've got a couple of followers. What would your advice be for building myself up as a streamer?
I think what's important, like one of the key things I talked about before I started streaming was that I watched other people do it. Before I started making videos on YouTube, I found somebody that I really liked who was already established, and like, I wouldn't say copy them, but like learn from them and sort of like really take notes as to what works for them and then try to find your own individuality from there. You have to be comfortable being in front of an audience. Like, I have a big background in theatrics. Like, I went to college for performing arts, and high school I was always in a play. I did paid gigs at a coffee shop. Like, I was a singer and guitar player, right? So I've kind of already built up being comfortable in front of people, and I like having an audience. Those are two things that I think are key to streaming, is you have to be comfortable and you have to enjoy it. I think that it's really important not to expect things too fast. And as far as like being in front of people goes and offering content, you have to put out stuff that people can digest. Like, think about, like, one of the other things I said, you have to put out stuff that you yourself would like watching. Think about that. Learn how to talk to yourself if things are starting out slow. One thing you should do when you're done streaming too, always host people, always hang out in their chat. Build relationships, surround yourself with people that you truly do like. Don't try to like fish for people, because if you find people that you like, you'll grow together, you know? Mm. So for example, if when you're done streaming and you host somebody, you hang out there for 20, 30 minutes, even an hour, like, and you're talking in their chat, those people that were already there hanging out, like that enjoyed that streamer, then they'll be more likely to want to hang out with you, and you'll probably enjoy them and have a genuine relationship and a true foundation for what's building there, you know? And it's not going to happen overnight. It might not happen fast. You might not score all those people that you're quote unquote looking for, but you know, just stay true to yourself and surround yourself with good people, and you'll be able to figure it out from there. I think, you know, it's all a process.
Yeah, I mean, it's a process that I think a lot of people, like you said, you know, trying to expect it to happen like right now, and forgetting to put in not only the work, but the sort of, I think there's something to be said for the partners that, you know, didn't achieve it, you know, within 6 months to a year. The partners that sort of achieved it over 2 years or 3 years, like, aren't necessarily any better or any worse than any of the other partners, but they tend to have, well, I won't say tend to have, but, you know, I feel like there's something to be said for the long-term people that spent years getting partnership, because that really shows dedication and, you know, admiration for the craft and the sort of, well, everything, you know, because, I mean, streaming is mentally draining, right? It's not, a lot of people sort of don't think, but a lot of people, there is some people out there that think that streaming is easy and it's just a case of just, you know, sitting in front of a camera and playing games all day, but it's a lot harder than that. And I mean,
yeah, it took partnership took me 11 applications, just to like put it into perspective. It's
and exactly, and by, I mean, I bet by application 3 you were probably like, maybe not developing self-doubt, but you must have, you know, been thinking, oh, am I ever gonna get it by application 3? Never mind application like 7, 8, 11.
Yeah. More the denials that felt the most unfair were, you know, because I would always reply to the emails and ask like, hey, what am I missing? What do I need to do better? And the one response I always got were like, hey, you're doing great, you're growing, but your viewership needs to be this number. And sometimes it already was there. Like, they said 80 concurrent viewers. It was before achievements even came out. They were telling me, you need 80 concurrent viewers. I'm like, I have 95 though. Like, what's going on? So they're definitely, with some people, they're slower to accept than others, but it is what it is, you know?
Yeah, and I mean,
fine.
I kind of find that a little bit strange in a way, because you were obviously streaming like Pokemon and Smash, and I find that a little bit weird because it was never really like a huge, like Smash and Pokemon and thing. I mean, Pokemon is in its own right a massive, massive, you know, it's got a massive fan base, but in terms of viewership for those games long term isn't exactly like Fortnite, you know. They've never been constantly sat around like 80-90k viewers, so it's kind of weird to me that it'd take that long to partner you in a game that you could almost sort of class as niche, you know.
Yeah, I would say that Pokemon is definitely a niche community. Smash right now is not as niche, just because like I think everybody with a Switch owns and plays it. But I would still say, like, over time, like, the thing that's probably just going to keep Smash up viewership-wise is tournaments and DLC, and that's it, you know?
And I think as well, the Nintendo Switch is... It's a massively popular console anyway, handheld console, but it's definitely slowly sort of building. It's like one of those consoles where it... I mean, I don't know perfectly well, because obviously I don't own a Switch, so you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong here, but from an outside perspective, it feels like the Switch was one of those where it sort of launched and it had like a good launch, but then it sort of just stayed level. But then over time, like anything, over time, the sales have sort of grown and grown and grown. And I've noticed that the Switch as a console has become like more popular as time has gone on rather than less popular.
I do think that they released it like a little too early, but at the same time, what is too early? You know what I mean? Like, it felt like I had just bought a Wii U and they were really pushing for the Wii U, and then out of nowhere, it's like, here's the Switch with Breath of the Wild. Breath of the Wild's also on the Wii U, by the way. Like, it wasn't a perfect launch, but they did, and they have been doing a good job with it as time has gone on. You're definitely right. It's been a steady build-up for them. Like my content. So maybe that's what we have in common, me and Nintendo, you know? We're all about that slow pace.
Yeah, because we got a Wii in the past. I never really did get into the Wii as a console. The Wii U sort of went over my head. I didn't ever really look into the Wii U. But then the Switch came about. Now, obviously, I don't own a Switch, and the Switch to me was like another one of those consoles that you'd buy, kind of like the Nintendo DS. You'd buy your kid to just sort of, you know, let them kill time for a couple of hours a day. But it wasn't until a good friend of mine brought a Switch round with a dock to plug it into the TV, and then we sat with my fiance and her and played. The Mario Kart 8, is it 8? Deluxe version, I believe. And we just sat all night just playing Mario Kart. And then ever since that day, my fiance has been trying to find a cheap Nintendo Switch, because they're still quite highly priced. And I don't know what they're like over in the US, but in the UK, they're still, you know, £300-400 pound to buy. So we've been trying to find one so that we can get... Mario Kart, so that we can sit and, you know, try and beat each other on Mario Kart. But the Switch has been like one of those consoles where it's been completely out of my radar, and then it's sort of like come into the radar, and then it's like, damn, we could get a lot of fun out of this, so we should probably get one. And then with that, obviously, you know, we might end up buying Smash, we might not, and then, you know, might end up playing you eventually. Who knows Nobody knows what the future is gonna hold for us, but if we were to sort of move on and start obviously wrapping things up a little bit here, tell us a little bit about you know, your ability to handle, because this comes up a lot actually, is your ability to handle like any sort of trolls, if you like. I think the go-to term is trolls or hate on Twitch, because this question's been popping up quite a lot in the last few episodes, so I wanted to get your take on it before the questions pop up.
Okay, so it really depends on what kind of day you catch me on, because Emotionally, I can be a little volatile. Like, sometimes I'll be able to, like, throw a joke back. Sometimes I will get upset. I mean, over time, I haven't really been jumping to as much as, like, this bothers me. But there have definitely been times where you catch me on the wrong day and something really does make me upset. But I think something that I've learned to be able to do is make fun of myself. So if anybody else makes fun of me, I've already had that armor to where it doesn't really bother me as much. So let's say somebody comes in and they make fun of my appearance, I'm just like, yeah, okay. If you were to attack my friends or like talk shit about somebody else, then I would be a little bit more guarded and upset. But I think it's easy to identify what you should just get rid of and ban or time out versus what you should respond to. And when I do respond to something, I try to like meet it with humor or a joke or just kind of like play along with it. And then more often than not, they'll just get bored and leave before they even need to get banned or something. You know, like there was somebody the other day where I accidentally jumped off the stage early and lost a life in Smash. And I was like, oh no, if I lose this, I'm going to have to rematch you. Let's make this a best 3 out of 5 instead of best 2 out of 3. And this guy comes in and he's like, dude, you're getting smacked. Just take the loss, bro. I was like, oh, okay. I mean, you probably are just trying to bother me, whatever. And then I won and I'm like, yo, what's up, man? Like, you still here? And then he said bye. And I was like, yep. You know?
Oh, that's so brilliant.
Yeah, so if people try to bother you, I think you just kind of have to not let them. You have to find your way of, like, whether it's a joke, whether it's just ignoring them, you know, not really giving them that ammunition that they're looking for, I think is important. And everybody could have their methods. You could just jump to timing them out or banning them right away if that's what you want to do. Like, if your gut is telling you that it's not going to go well, it probably isn't. But if you want to give somebody the benefit of the doubt, sometimes it can really end up well. Like, if you just play along with them or joke back at them, then they might be like, oh, you're really cool, and then stick around and, like, take off that mask of being a dickhead, you know?
Yeah, so. I mean, I was speaking to somebody a while back, and they said to sort of have a plan in the back of your head that your moderating team, if you like, will always know what to do, how to respond to different levels. Because obviously every content creator at some point is going to receive some sort of criticism. It's part of just being in the public eye. I've had my fair share of like people that have, you know, commented on my appearance or, you know, on my weight and things like that. And it's just having a plan, like, you know, anything that anybody on Twitch comes in and says to me is like something that I've already had, you know, going through school, going through, you know, just life in general. And, you know, like you said, I've kind of already built up an armor to it. You know, I'm actively trying to change who I am. You know, I've started going to the gym, started eating more healthily, trying to lose weight and things. So if anybody comes in and takes a dig at that, then it's like, you know, it's kind of like, oh, just come back when you've got something a bit more unique to say or something that nobody's heard before. But yeah, kind of most of the insults that I've ever received are kind of, they feel like, I'll tell you what it feels like. It feels like you sort of walk into the shop and you walk past that group of like, those like misfit kids that are just like throwing pebbles at cars, and then one of them throws an insult at you, and you're like, you just sort of like shake your head and you just sort of like ignore it, because it's like one of those like 10-year-olds that are throwing like, oh, you're a fatty, like,
yeah,
all right then, well done Captain Obvious, and just carry on. And it's like that sort of thing. It's just, a lot of it is just, it's I think, I don't know, I don't want to generalize people, but I feel like a lot of it is just, you know, people being a bit younger on this platform. And it's just one of those things, I suppose. But I mean, is there anything else that you had in mind that you wanted to discuss, or anything that you wanted to, or anything you wanted to build on that we've discussed today?
Well, I think, like, when it comes to trolls, I don't think there's anything wrong with you for reacting emotionally if that's what you do. You know, there, or if you want to talk about it, if somebody said something that's bothered you, I don't think there's anything wrong with you. I think that a common narrative is that, like, a lot of people will say, oh, just ignore it, bro, or, like, don't let it get to you. Like, it's so easy to just give advice to somebody when a streamer is talking about what they want. Like, if it's not for you as the viewer, just leave. Don't listen to it. If you don't like that a streamer is talking about something, like, if you just want them to move on, like, yeah, there is power in being able to just walk away from the situation. But I think that there's also power in being able to hear where a content creator is coming from. And I think that it isn't the norm for somebody to be like, yo, this really gets to me. Yo, I want to talk about this. This was personal. Like, I don't know, just handle it how you want to, and you'll figure out what works and doesn't work for you as you go on. You know, there's no, I think that the people that are the worst at content are the ones that try too hard to like fit a formula. There's no like right or wrong way to do something other than following terms of service, you know, like just find your way, your own way. Don't, if anything, don't stick to the mold. Don't stick to the set path. Don't let achievements, the achievement system, make you think that you need to rush to meet a goal or anything. Just go about your way and just try to have fun. You know, if you can't smile, if you're stressing yourself out, then you're not cut out for it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You touched on something there that we have mentioned briefly, but I kind of feel like we should mention it again. In that, you sort of touched upon, you know, like, meeting the mold, or I think that were the words that you used, or like, sorry, sort of being different from, basically being different from the usual or the norm. I think that falls under the same thing of people sort of copying, if you like, the successful people because they've hit success. So if they're doing it, then if I do it, then it must work, right? But the reason why it worked for those successful people in the first place is because they were the first person to probably do what they are doing in terms of being different to everybody else. They probably didn't look at, you know, like getting into Twitch now and streaming Fortnite. The people that are successful, like Ninja, for example, is like a huge staple for the platform. On Twitch, you know, people look at Ninja, and a lot of people, thousands of people, must try and copy him daily to try and achieve the success that he had. But Ninja didn't get that success because he copied somebody else. He was just doing what he did, and he was, you know, he had a good his wife, who's great at marketing, and at marketing, you know, being his sort of brand marketer and things, has done a great job at getting his name out there and doing the right thing in order to get that exposure. But he didn't, you know, copy of anybody directly. He said, "Oh, I'm going to do this in the stream, and I'm going to make it mine." And then it becomes part of what people associate with him, to a point of where people start to expect it, and then that just becomes part of his brand, and that's what sort of made him grow. So, yeah, I mean, You hit the nail on the head. There's not really much else we can say on it. You know, like, don't try and fit into the current mold. Try and break that and, you know, become something new, and just be self-aware as to what is working and what isn't working with being trying to be new, and then push forward is kind of what I've got to say on that, I suppose.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, if there's nothing else that you... In fact, actually, no. I'm going to stop myself here because there is something that I want to talk to you about, because I tweeted out, and don't worry, I've already got a lot of slack for this from a lot of other people, including Seti, the Green Dumpling, gave me a little bit of slack for this as well. I tweeted out something about 3 weeks ago, and I said, and I made it a PSA for a reason, although looking back on it, I just badly worded it. I'm terrible at wording things, by the way. I always have been. But I tweeted out and I said that streaming is for everybody, and you retweeted it and said, "Oh, I don't agree with this." And I was like, at first I was like, "Oh shit, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble here, boys." But then the more that I thought about it, like, I mean, it was a case of me just not wording things correctly, but I didn't want to discuss it briefly because, the reason why I said I believe that streaming is for everybody is because what I was trying to say is that there is something on Twitch for everybody, in terms of, you know, if you want to be on Twitch but you don't want to stream games, you know, there's IRL, or just chatting, there's art, there's, I mean, poker, if you're into poker, that's quite a big category. There's hundreds of categories on Twitch that aren't just sort of gaming focused. But I mean, obviously I've sort of clarified myself before I've even let you put your point in there, but I mean, would you disagree that streaming is for everybody?
Yeah, it's because, like, to be a streamer, the majority of people, like, to make the streamer part of it work, the majority of people surrounding you have to be a viewer, right? So I feel like, just think of it like this. Like, not everybody can be an actor. Not everybody can be a movie star. Not everybody can be famous. I look at streaming the same way. Not everybody can be, like, the creator. And most people really can't, but a lot of people want to and aspire to be, or like they dream slash fantasize about being that. But I think that like the role of being like the moderator, or the role of being staff for Twitch, or the role of like being an OBS developer, like there's so many different roles. Like, I guess comparing it to theater, there's the actors, and then there's stage crew, and then there's pit orchestra, there's the director, right? Like, there are so many other roles that are surrounding streaming that other people fit into, and not everybody's good at being an entertainer. Not everybody's good at like being behind a camera and being able to make it work. Like, a lot of people, if they were to hit start streaming, they would just freeze up and not know what the hell they're doing. So I think that, like I said, you have to have a background in being comfortable in front of an audience. I think that's like really important, or you need to like build up those skills. I think that when you say it's for everybody, and I know that that's like a general thing that you're saying, like everybody or anybody can do it and make it work, I don't agree with that, because not everybody has those skills or even aspires to have those skills, you know? And I think it's cool to say that there is a category or directory for everybody. Yeah, there's people that can go in the cooking directory, or like the art directory, or whatever they want to do. It's cool that Twitch is that diverse, but even within that diversity, not everybody can be a caster. I firmly believe that it's not for everybody. And if you were to preach that it was, then that could make content creation infinitely harder if everybody's just trying to be the star of the show, right? Like, you need a viewership, you need an audience. Like, not everybody within that viewership or audience can also run their own show. I find being a viewer to be exhausting and not something that I can do every day. Like, I watch streams maybe once or twice a week, you know, but that's my role every now and then. Not everybody can be a viewer either. Some people are the performer, you know. That's
interesting, especially that last bit, because there's a big scene on Twitch now. That is the sort of support for support scene, where people are sort of, you know, streaming and creating like a support community, where when they are not streaming, they'll then go and watch, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 people, in hopes that those 20, 30, 40 people then come and watch them when they can, when they're not streaming. And I think that's become quite a big part of Twitch, but it's kind of interesting that you're not necessarily disagreeing with that, but you're kind of saying that, you know, there is some people that, you know, are designed to be the streamer, and then there's those that are designed to be the viewer in a certain simplified fashion, which is a good, it's kind of a different take on it, because, you know, I think a lot of people would argue that, you know, anybody can be a viewer, but I mean. It kind of does take, because it's not about watching somebody, just simply watching somebody, though, is it? It's about interacting with that person, and this is why I've always said on Twitch that you need to create an experience, and I've always been that sort of person that sort of said, oh well, you need to focus more on chat than the game, and I don't know if you'd agree with that or not. Depending on, you know, if you're in a competitive game, I suppose, like Smash, it's a little bit harder to be all like, hey, chat, let's talk to chat, than, you know, focus on what you're doing in the game. So I suppose competitive games are a little bit different. But I feel for a lot of people, you know, a lot of people put a lot of focus into chat where they, into the game where they don't put as much into the chat. And then, you know, I feel like a lot of people suffer because of that, because, you know, it doesn't take long for somebody to come into a chat, say hi, not get a response, and then, you know, go elsewhere because there's other people streaming right then that they would rather be watching.
I feel like when it comes to, like, When you're talking about, like, your chat's important, I don't disagree with you, but it just depends on the content. Like, if a streamer's interactive, then, yeah, pay attention to your chat. Talk to your chat as much as you can. But I know there's streamers like Raj Patel who does, like, his like, nightly Tinder things. I don't know if you've ever heard of Raj Patel, but he does a live show where he has, like, four girls on, and then he picks a guy from the audience, and they all, like, judge him and rate the guy, and, like, they get to know the guy, and it's really interesting and it's fun. And as a viewer of that, all I have to do is lurk and I'm entertained. Like, the streamer's not obligated to talk to chat in that instance. You know, with podcasts like this, like, the chat would probably come very, very secondary. I would think that it just depends on the content. I know there's also an art streamer that's really popular, and he's partnered. He doesn't even have a mic, and people watch him just to make his art. You know, like, it just really depends. But just like with anything, there's so much types of, like, diverse content. And then there's YouTubers too, that they interact with their audience. They're like, yo, let me know in the comments below and we'll talk about it in the next video, right? And we'll address this, or we'll do, like, viewer questions on Twitter or on Reddit, right? Like, everybody's got their thing when it comes to interactivity, but it's always different, and it's very dependent on what the content is. Yeah,
I mean, obviously me and you could sort of sit and talk about different elements of Twitch all night, and, you know, we'd both have different viewpoints, which is, you know, natural being on a platform like you said that is so diverse and different, and everybody can, you know, in fact, you said it yourself, there is no right and wrong. As long as you're sticking within the TOS, you can do anything. So I don't really think there's, you know, the person that can definitively tell you what you should and shouldn't be doing, or you should be going down this path and nothing else. It's a case of, oh, well, you know, here's an open field. Mm-hmm. Go in one direction, take a direction, and just go in it. Like, you know, you stood in the middle of a field, you can go in any direction. Just take one and go in it. I feel like that's the best way of describing Twitch, is you can go in any direction and make it work as long as you stick within TOS. But I feel like we could sit here and discuss that all night. So,
yeah.
But unfortunately, we don't have all night, and I'm sure you don't have all day. So that being said, if there's nothing that you want to add to finalize this, where can people find you, Kevy?
You can find me twitch.tv/Kevy, as you see above my head. I don't know if I'm pointing it properly. Kevy Pride on Twitter or Instagram, and then youtube.com. I'll type it in the chat. It's youtube.com/pokevsim. That was, like, my first account. And oh, you can't post links in chat. Oops.
I should have seen that coming.
It'd be pokevsim, youtube.com/that. You could probably search, like, Kevy Smash Bros on YouTube and find me there. I have some, like, informational Smash videos and, like, entertaining Pokemon content. And that's about it. Yeah.
But yeah, aside from that, thank you so much, Kevy, for coming on the podcast. I really, really appreciate you taking, you know, this time out of your day. Hopefully you've still got a little bit of time to answer any questions that chat might have afterwards. But aside from that, thank you so much, dude. It means a lot that you've, you know, taken an hour or so to come out and chat with us today. And I really do appreciate it, bro. So, yeah, chat. Sorry. So, yeah, thank you for that, Kevy. Guys, thank you for listening to episode number 10 of the podcast this week. Massively appreciate it, guys. If you haven't already, make sure you go over to Twitter at It's the Mike James. Let me know what you thought of the episode. Don't forget to share it with your friends, everybody. And don't forget to go and follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheMikeJames. I want to give a quick shout out this week to CloudFreeFiddy, who said, "Your interview with Gear Up was so great. Keep rocking those podcasts, man." Thank you so much for your kind words, dude. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and I hope hope your content is going great. And don't forget, guys, if you'd like to support the podcast in a more direct manner, you can head over to patreon.com/TheMikeJames and pledge as little as $1, where you can pledge all the way up to $25, where you can get the podcast 24 hours earlier, or you can just support me, or there's a whole range of perks if you want to get, you know, some exclusive access to the Discord server. Guys, thank you so much. Hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll see you guys next time.